When you're fed up with fighting food and your body, join us here. I'm Ali Shapiro, creator of the Truce with Food program and your host for Insatiable, where we explore the hidden aspects of fighting our food, our weight, and our bodies, and dive deep into nutrition science and true whole health. Fair warning, this is not your parents' health care. This is a big rebel yell to those who crave meaning, hunger for truth, and whose lust for life is truly insatiable. Believe me, freedom awaits. Welcome, insatiable listeners, to our secret mini-sode about how to stop comfort eating. Tonight, we are going to talk about the three different comfort eating styles we go between, the one mindset shift needed to stop comfort eating, and how to get into this mindset with my real clients, or I should say former clients that are here, Karen and Linda. Thanks for joining me, guys, or gals.
You're welcome.
We've been laughing before we even got started, and we'll explain why once we get to the different styles. We were joking that are we going to be competitive or accommodating about giving the best answers? Or so I hope that you guys really enjoy this. So tonight, after this episode, I really hope that you walk away with a framework to stop comfort eating. And one of my favorite quotes of all times is from Einstein, who said, "If I had an hour to save the world, I'd spend more time defining the problem than actually solving it." And so really, this root diagnosis of why we turn to comfort eating has very little to do with willpower and discipline. And it's more about when we feel powerless over our stress and overwhelm. And by powerless, I mean that we don't have any choices. It's not the stress itself. It's when we think we have no choice in how we handle what's coming at us. And so much of freedom, specifically food freedom, is about the ability to choose. So what exactly are these three styles that only add stress and leak energy towards pursuing our health goals, but also make us feel powerless over our stress and send us straight to the food and booze? And these three styles are called the competitor, the avoider, and the accommodator. And these three styles are adapted from the Thomas Kilman conflict model. So if you kind of go over each of the three. So the first style that we have is the competitor. And the competitor really values their goal, but not the relationship in pursuit of their goal. So if we, and that relationship can be with our own bodies, right? So if, for example, with our bodies, we value weight loss over cultivating a relationship with our body about what's supportive over the long term, right? So we kind of ignore our hunger, ignore what really works for us, and does a plan in pursuit of this like fast weight loss. Or we push ourselves through a workout, even if we're exhausted at the end, or maybe it's the week of our period, which means we shouldn't be pushing ourselves and we should be doing more restorative exercise, but we don't value the relationship to our body with our energy levels. We just kind of want to achieve our goal at all costs. So a little thumbnail sketch of the competitor. The competitor views their body and certain life areas in competition with others, either their thinner selves or mostly their family or peers. Skinny is winning because being thin gives us the most confidence, have the best dating options, and the most happiness. The competitor basically wins at success. Competitors feel extremely accomplished when losing weight and take aggressive risks in life, the more weight loss success we feel. These risks, not our weight loss, lead to more success and happiness. However, the finish line for competitors is always moving, as we really fear missing out. So we always feel like we could lose 10 more pounds or achieve even more, making it a challenge to savor what we have achieved. On the flip side, when we're gaining weight or feel out of control with our eating, competitors overeat because they feel behind, like they're losing and missing out. And if we're losing at weight loss, we fear we'll also miss out on success or happiness. And the challenge with this, again, another one, is the competitor will always find someone thinner or further ahead of them. And our own finish line is always moving, making competing unsustainable. Over time, the competitor eating pattern leads to isolating ourselves as we feel different in a bad way. Like our food issues are something uniquely bad that we cannot share with friends and family. The isolation creates a self-fulfilling prophecy as we miss out on success and happiness from not engaging with areas of life that can create the connection and happiness we are craving, which includes having a strong relationship with our own body and what it needs and wants. Competitors conclude we're losing because of our weight, when in reality, when we are losing weight, we took risks to put ourselves out there and thus achieve more success and happiness. In summary, competitors, they think, am I ahead or behind? Am I winning or losing? They tend to feel angry when they're losing. Their behaviors are overachieve and then isolate themselves when they're not overachieving. They self-sabotage by comparing to others, and they tend to frame situations as black or white. Next, sound familiar, guys?
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, so familiar.
Or gals, I should say. It's the default no longer should be male. Okay, side commentary. Next, we have the avoider. The avoider views eating healthy and weight loss as really hard and complicated because avoiders tend to build up or over-dramatize what will be involved for results. We often choose eating plans like Whole30, which is extreme yet confirms our dramatic view of food, or Weight Watchers, which enables us to avoid doing the emotional work around food. Avoiders are great at switching plans when imperfection hits. Avoiders feel that skinny is success because it will be easier to be the real, confident us. The drama will be gone. It will be easier to use our voices and interact with the world. Avoiders have confidence when losing weight because we take losing weight as a sign we have the answer, the dramatic answer, right? Which keeps imperfections at a minimum, making life appear easier when we're often just avoiding what's complicated. Because we are taking action instead of avoiding, we generate momentum, which leads to success. On the flip side, when the perfect choice is unclear, the stakes feel so high that we withdraw or shut down. Or when other people's negative reactions to our food and life choices occur, which is often because we've avoided sharing our needs, we go into chuck it, fuck it mode and tend to silently chew and eat in frustration. Because avoiders will need to discover what foods work for our individual body and transform the avoid pattern that keeps them stressed and overwhelmed, avoiding the feeling of there not being a perfect answer or solution is unsustainable. Over time, the avoider eating patterns lead to resentful overeating outbursts through the drive-thru or home cabinets from avoiding getting our physical and emotional needs met. This overeating will have us switch to another rigid plan instead of developing confidence from working through the imperfect yet empowering process of discovering our food needs and body's power. Because we don't learn to communicate clearly about our needs, a self-fulfilling prophecy of food, health, and weight loss being so dramatically hard arises, and we lose confidence. The snapshot of the avoider is thinking, don't rock the boat, chuck it, fuck it, why will it matter? Feelings are condescending self-doubt and resentment. The behaviors are to withdraw, shut down, or procrastinate. Self-sabotage by making things more difficult by building them up. Think of dramatic views of it. And frame situations as all or nothing. Lastly, we have the accommodator. The accommodator's view, oh, and I forgot to mention, the avoiders, they don't value their goals and they also don't value their relationships, right? If we're not really telling our body or the people in our lives or work, et cetera, what we need, we're not really valuing what we're trying to pursue. And so we don't value our goal enough to make it happen. And we don't value the relationship to get there. The accommodators. Now, accommodators really view the relationship with, say, their bodies or other people, but they don't value their own goals. So that's equally problematic. The accommodator views eating healthy and weight loss as difficult because we use food to treat and reward ourselves. We get excited to be bad on weekends, holidays, special occasions like going out to dinner, or vacations because it's an excuse for a well-deserved cheat. We feel that skinny is success because life will be more fulfilling as we choose more of what we really want instead of accommodating our own shoulds, have-tos, and others. Accommodators lose weight when they keep healthy food exciting, don't feel deprived, and have interests outside weight loss that keep them fulfilled. This creates an energetic cycle of meaning that leads to even more desire to keep meaningfully exploring health and life. On the flip side, when food becomes the main source of reward and connection, we lose the desire to prioritize healthy eating. We feel bored and deprived and don't want to miss out on a fulfilling time as we're now already low energy. Because food is a constant source of stimulation, entertainment, and bringing people together, relying on food to be the highlight of our days and experiences is unsustainable. Over time, the accommodator looks for more and more reasons to cheat, like when we forget our packed lunch or because we had a hard day accommodating everyone else, leading us to feel we have an abnormal love of food and it's harder for us to eat healthy. As accommodators rely more on food to be the way we reward, connect, and spend our time, for example, weight loss becomes our only hobby, which happened to me for several decades or a decade, resources are diverted from finding other fulfilling pursuits. A self-fulfilling prophecy results as we come to love food more than others because it's serving as a source of meaning beyond taste. And this summary for accommodators is thinking, am I doing enough? How can I adapt, make this work? The feeling is generally one of guilt. Behaviors are people-pleasing, adapting, trying to fix others or rescue them. Accommodators self-sabotage by keeping score, right? This is why I deserve this treat. And they frame situations as either or. And I totally forgot to say that avoiders frame situations as all or nothing. I think I forgot that. So that is the summary. These are the three comfort eating styles that keep us stuck around food and bodies and are also ways we see stress and overwhelm that make us feel powerless and then turn to food. In other words, you have the surface battle, which is with food, yet it's reflecting a deeper emotional battle with stress that makes us overwhelmed and turn to food. While we do flip between the three styles, there's usually a pretty comfortable resting place we each have. So for example, I didn't know it when I was battling food, but I was a competitor with my previous thinner self and also compared my bodies to other women. And I used to compete in my career too. However, when I don't know people that well, I tend to accommodate. So we do tend to flip through styles. And Karen and Linda, do you guys find that you flip through styles as well, like kind of seeing yourself in all three?
Totally. I feel like even as you were explaining that again, I was like, oh, yep, that's me with food. Oh, yep, that's me with work. Oh, but then I do that with exercise. And that's kind of me, like, constant. I feel like I can see both in a lot of, or all of them in a lot of aspects of my life.
Yeah, same here. I like there were pieces of each one that I totally see. And I don't want to say I'm completely solved from it, but I also at some points in my life, and maybe it was like a work persona or different situations that might bring out different personalities.
Yeah, yeah. That's how nuanced it can be of when we switch styles. Different people trigger different ideas from our past of how we have to to manage this. And I think you guys both bring up a good point about like when you're first coming into this framework, you see certain things at the surface. And then the more you go into it, the more you're like, oh my God, that's what I'm doing. Like you can't see everything in the beginning, right? It's just too hard. Okay. So now that we know what the actual challenge or root diagnosis is, what's our prescription or the solution? So we need to shift into a fourth conflict style, which is collaboration. Collaboration is when we work with our body, our emotions, and the people we care about, and how we spend our time to cultivate successful and meaning outcomes. In other words, conflict can be useful. We are not taught that. This is a mindset shift in and of itself. But especially in white supremacy cultures, conflict is viewed as bad because it upsets the people in power. And the power structures are intentionally designed to keep us in our marginalized places. That's why our culture is so violent. That's the history of keeping people in their place. In truth, conflict can be productive and produce wildly creative solutions that we can't see at first glance. This is very true with food in our bodies. When we collaborate with what our bodies need, that includes food, emotional, and soul hungers, we can live a wildly freeing and fulfilling life. So the key mindset shift here is to see conflict as productive when it's collaborative. I like to think of conflict not as conflict, but a creative solution opportunity, if we can rename it. Because conflict has such a negative connotation, when we view it as an opportunity to delight and surprise ourselves, we're more likely to put in the effort. One of the highlights of my life was when I discovered I could reverse my allergies, acne, asthma, depression, and IBS by collaborating with what my body was hungry for. First on a physical level by learning the right foods for my body, and then once I got some power and confidence back, I was able to listen to what was left of my depression or emptiness as a symptom. And this collaboration led to going back to grad school at Penn and creating my out-of-the-box Truth with Food approach. Am I allowed to say it's out of the box? No, does someone else have to say that?
You should know. We'll it definitely it is. Yeah.
Okay. It's out of the box, but it's great.
out of the box, but not meaning like from a box. You know what I mean? Like prepackaged. It's like
there's no box. Like, you're right.
You're such an alumni that you're clarifying the context, right? You know that people can take so many different meanings out of that. I love it. I know that sometimes people get pulled apart on the web and the internet when they call themselves a thought leader. It's like, you're not allowed to call yourself that. So, okay, but I could say this is out of the box. Yeah. So all of this was a collaboration between my body, emotional fulfillment, and mending my soul from having had cancer. So that's a macro view of what can happen when we collaborate with our bodies. I mean, this has taken me 10 years. But you start to get relief on a daily basis and can start to reduce your stress, and it starts to alter the course of your life in subtle yet profound ways, the more long-term level we get to collaborating. So before we get to that, I want to give you a tool, which are two questions that will enable you to collaborate effectively. Because while this is simple, it doesn't mean easy. So to really shift into this collaboration mindset where conflict can be collaborative, you need to get clear on first, what are your needs? And second, what are the needs of the other person or the situation at hand? Often we are reacting to what's happening versus checking in with ourselves and figuring out what we need. I can't tell you how many clients find this small act profound and revolutionary. So to collaborate effectively, you start with checking in on what's important or what you need. And then you need to get clear on what's important or needed by others or the situation. And make sure you ask people what they need. Don't assume. Or if it's a work project or something, get as clear as possible on what's important or expectations are needed with the project. Each situation will have different important things. Okay, so now we can get the talk show, Linda Richman portion of this. Oh my God, the millennials are probably like, who's Linda Richman? She was this woman on Saturday Night Live who had a hilarious skit. But I'm going to start with you, Linda, since you're our competitor representative, even though Karen and I can both totally relate. Can you give first of all, about how seeing this pattern with your own health journey supported you, and then can give some specific examples of how collaborating with this supported you?
Yeah, so seeing it really helped because it helped me identify when I was in that, I was going to say collaborative pattern, but competitive pattern. So for example, and I actually didn't realize that this is what I was doing until you were talking about the collaboration approach. So I think without having a name for it, I was going through this really stressful time at work and I was trying to work out. Like I was like, if I work out, I know my life's going to get easier. Like I know I need to do this. So I would work out, but I was really mad at myself because it wasn't as easy as it used to be because I hadn't worked out for like 6 months. So it was this back and forth situation where I would try and then I would be like, I'm not where I was before. Like, so if I did like a intense yoga class, like I couldn't do, you know, like the planks and it was frustrating. So I was like, 6 months ago, I could do these. Why couldn't I do it? So I kind of looked at it and I'm like, and I actually think it was because I heard you say something similar on one of your podcasts. And I was like, I think I'm getting mad at myself and that's kind of making the cycle worse because I guess now I'm looking at it. I'm like, I was probably competing with my 6 month ago self. Like, why is this hard? And I checked in, like, what do I need right now? Well, I'm working out because I want to be less stressed. That's really the goal here. And I guess kind of framing it in my competitive self, I needed a goal. The goal was reduce my stress. So I started doing gentle yoga. And I was like, I'm not going to judge the fact that I'm not working out. I feel like I need to work out. Gentle yoga to me is not a workout. But I did that. And doing it a couple of times a week got me kind of out of that mode. And it was also helping me get a little bit stronger because I just really hadn't been moving. But I think it was just really just recognizing that it was happening. And I think to me, I noticed the competitiveness when it feels like a battle, when I'm feeling like I'm going into war with something. And that's what I think I'm noticing in a lot of areas of my life where at work, if in the past, you know, I wouldn't tell people that I was gluten-free because I'm like, oh, what if down the road I decide to cheat and have gluten and they're going to be judging me. But I'm like, that's me being competitive with myself telling people about how they're like, no one cares. Like they don't even notice what I'm doing, you know? But it's like when I notice that like tense, you know, I feel the competition, like I'm going into battle. That's when I try to check in. Like, what am I like, what's really going on here? There's something else at play.
I love that example because both short-term and long-term, the competitor's challenge is to accept their own cycles and timing, right? That like the finish line is in your imagination, right? It's like there is going to be cycles when we don't exercise or there is going to be cycles when we're not sleeping well or whatever. And it's being okay with that. And I think what also you highlighted was the other challenge is for us to figure out as competitors what metrics really matter to us versus what we've been conditioned to believe we want, which in our culture is faster, better, you know, all the stuff. But you started to feel better immediately, right? In terms of, okay,
right,
where I am, rather than, okay, but I'm going to compare myself to my old self. It's like, but that self is not there anymore. So it's like, how can I feel replenished now rather than exhausted by a battle with myself?
Yeah, that's exactly. And I also think it's that like baby steps, like going into this big battle where in reality, it's like, well, what am I looking to do? Just feel better tonight. Like get to one class, do one thing. And I think that's where, you know, I love having goals and being a goal-oriented person, but sometimes it needs to just be a little bit shorter of a goal. It doesn't have to be the giant goal.
Yeah, well, but I would also say that shorter goal got you to now you're working out again regularly. So
yeah,
it's like,
that's right.
You, instead of going from 0 to 60 to get ahead or be where you were before, you went 0 to 10 to 20 to 30. You know, it's like you'll get back to where you were and even further, because the battle itself is what wears us down. Ultimately, what sabotages us when we're battling food, it's the battle itself of food. And it's also this battle with our stress that we can handle the stress and overwhelm actually, if we know we have choices.
Yeah. So true. So true.
Thank you. So I'm going to stand in for the avoiders. All the avoiders I reached out to were avoiding. No, I'm just kidding. If they hear this, I'm totally kidding. I think they would laugh too. We're a pretty humorous bunch here. But I was going to give an example about exercise, because that's still something that I can easily avoid. And it's similar to Linda's theme of exercise and needing momentum, right? Avoiders need momentum. And once I discovered maybe 5 or 6 years ago that exercise doesn't really influence your weight that much, the incentive really dropped. Once I was eating regularly, I was like, oh, I don't need to work out as much. However, we know being sedentary is bad for you, and it does tremendous bigly things for me in terms of my mood, my energy. Karen's shaking her. You know I can't not get in these little political references. So for me, I avoid when it comes to exercise because I want there to be the perfect solution. I want it to be at lunchtime when I have the most energy, right before lunch. I'm still kind of caffeinated, but not like too tired. I want it to be a group class because I work by myself and I need the group class. I want to be able to walk there. I hate driving. I want it to be something where I can lift weights part of the time, but then do hip hop. Like I put all these stipulations because I'm looking for the perfect solution. And then I end up doing nothing. And so what is really important for me to realize is that there is no perfect solution, right? There is an imperfect solution, but I don't need things to be perfect and to make progress with working out, because at the end of the day, I'm looking for an energy rush and to calm down. I can do that walking around. There's a park 10 minutes from me. I can do that. And so for me, I've really learned to simplify where I can in terms of where can I make it easy that I don't really care, right? The days that for me, exercise is just about getting some energy, go take a walk, and then a couple times a week, put in the effort to get to a class. It may not be my ideal time, but can I get as close to the time that I want? Because I'm also trading off the solo aspect of that. So I'll get to see people, it'll engage me mentally because it's a boxing class and you have to concentrate. So really thinking for me in terms of what will give me momentum is a really great tool that has helped me to not avoid for as long. I may sometimes like still avoid for a day or two, but then I know now that if I keep avoiding, it's just going to get harder. And getting momentum back, especially Linda, as you were talking about yoga, I started going back to yoga 3 months ago, right in December. And my God, people think yoga is so easy. I couldn't do the planks. I couldn't hold the downward dogs. And I was like, I've been doing yoga since I was 19. I was like, I used to be able to do all this stuff. But I was like, you know, okay, but I like that it's hot. I was craving hot yoga. It had good times. So that gave me momentum. And then just to be, I really worked on my competitor side. So I was be able to be patient. And I was just impressed with that I was showing up because I avoid. So those are some specific examples of how I've worked with avoiding. And the tool there, or the tip is how can I get momentum and reconnect with why this is meaningful to me, right? It's not to work out just to burn calories. I don't count calories. It's to work out so that I can sleep better, feel better, and have more energy. Because I also realized that sitting so much makes me stagnant. I confuse exhaustion and being stagnant, but once I start moving, I have more energy. All right, Karen, accommodator.
Yeah. I think the area that I most see myself accommodating is in my work life. And then that translates to food. So I work in the healthcare field as a physical therapist. So I treat patients all day. I'm in a hospital setting. So they're not anywhere near their prime selves. They're at, you know, one of the lowest points in their lives. So I tend to identify with that, like, I'm the martyr type of mindset. So I will give my all and do everything I can for you, which is great in theory. That's why everyone goes into healthcare. But then by the end of, you know, a 10-hour day, which was the norm, I would come home and I would say, I deserve to get Chick-fil-A. Because I just spent 10 hours helping these people. I don't have the energy to cook for myself. This will be fine. Like, I'll just do that. Cause I, you know, I helped everybody else forget what I need. So then I would eat Chick-fil-A and probably get a milkshake once in a while too, which deep in my gut, I knew that dairy didn't work for me. And I also had a hunch that gluten didn't work for me. So it wasn't doing what I needed it to do for my body, but I felt like I'm doing all of this for other people all day. I don't have enough to do something for myself now. So I think what helped me change and kind of what I ask myself now is, what's the other option? Because with each situation at work or each task, each patient within each hour of the day, there's usually another option that I never let myself see, which is, can I format things differently in a session, or can I rearrange my to-do list to give me more energy by the time I get home so I can cook or at least go to the grocery store and get something healthier to make or something have on hand that would be easy to put together. So that was a big switch for me of just saying, what else, what other options do I have? Because that wasn't working.
I love that you pointed that out. We're in Truce with Food. We talk about this stuff more in detail. And I was talking to the group about how like 80% of this battle mentality or conflict mentality is often perceived, right? It's not even real. And one person has run with that. And she was like, I can't believe all the choices that are there when you ask yourself, what other options do I have? She's like, this is amazing. I mean, first there's like a grieving of how hard we've made our lives for ourselves, right? It's like, oh, no, what? I'm actually doing amazing with how drained I am, right? Given that it could be so much easier. So thank you for sharing that. I think that, and you really connect how that translates to food, right? Because like, I deserve this because of the energy drain. And it's like, you actually love your work. It's just, there's a tipping point where the rewards and the meaning like almost can't register because you're so exhausted. Like, it's not as meaningful if you have to throw yourself under the bus as well.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Wonderful. Great. So I'm going to go to a summary, but is there anything else you guys want to add about these styles and how you revisit them or anything else for listeners? I know this is kind of like off the cuff question, but
I would just say kind of how we mentioned before the call, I think, and within the call, I identify as a competitor with myself, with food in terms of where I used to be. I accommodate in relationships and at work. And then I do avoid exercise at times. So I think just keeping in mind that recognizing that you aren't just one and that you kind of have these different aspects of yourself in all of these styles is present and can help you better, maybe better identify which ones are with you.
Yeah, and that you don't have to tackle it all at once, right? Yeah. That would be setting yourself up for failure.
Well, that's what I was just, as I was listening to what you both said, it really resonated, like both of your examples resonated. And something that I was thinking as we were, as you were both talking and as I'm thinking about my examples, is almost like, and I'm thinking of my battle metaphor again, but it's almost like when you feel like it's, you're kind of on one end of the spectrum, either not doing anything or doing everything and it's feeling really hard. It almost feels like the answer is usually somewhere in the middle. So like what I immediately thought of during your example, I was also like in the past when I'd be like ramping up to go on a diet, like, oh, it's going to start Monday. So then all weekend I'm like living it up because I'm like, it's starting Monday. When in reality, like that doesn't really happen to me anymore because now there might be days where I didn't do what, you know, like maybe I did have Chick-fil-A, but it's not a usual thing. it's not like, well, Monday it starts so I can keep going. It's more just like, all right, well, tomorrow morning I wake up and I have my usual breakfast. But I feel like the answer is somewhere, like when I'm at either end, it's like, all right, where's the middle, kind of the middle point? And I think my middle point has probably changed a lot over the past couple of years since I've been working with you, but kind of getting back to that is probably usually the right direction.
I'm so glad you said that, because it is coming back to the middle path. There's two challenges with that. Is you often don't know what that middle path is, because you don't have the context to know what other choices are there, because you've been so extreme, right? Oddly, this creates a self-fulfilling prophecy where we're like, we need to battle, because if we don't battle, we're going to do nothing, or you know, I'm going to definitely be behind, or I'm going to lose. So yes, that is, collaboration is often that middle ground. I mean, it produces great results, but it's often this, like, I joke that, like, moderation is the new radical. It's like, oh, that was simple and easy. Like, right? It's not like you're fired or you're getting, like, thrown off the island. There's nothing dramatic about it in our culture. But the second thing is that the more that you learn to collaborate, you develop self-trust. And so you can trust being moderate, because your moderation swings, like, you truly become moderate over time, right? Like, versus, like, for example, in, like, Truce with Food, in the beginning, you're still in these patterns. I mean, the cool thing is you can see them now, but you're still kind of, like, feeling like, oh my God, I'm still overeating. And the challenge is not to, like, go back and restrict, because that just, it's like, okay, let me learn from this and move forward. So I'm glad that you pointed that out, Linda, because it brought up two really good points that ultimately we're going to have to build if we can maintain collaboration. Cool. All right. So thank you guys so much for sharing. Our community is so generous and I appreciate it. So in summary, I'm just going to summarize these styles again. Competitors tend to think, am I ahead or behind in the situation? Am I winning or losing? They feel anger, especially when they're losing. They have behaviors, they overachieve, right? But also isolate themselves. They tend to compare themselves to their thinner, younger selves or to others, specifically mostly other women's bodies. They frame situations in black and white. For avoiders, they tend to think, don't rock the boat. What will it matter? The feeling is resentment and, you know, condescending self-doubt. The behaviors are to withdraw, shut down, or procrastinate. And we self-sabotage by dramatizing things and making things more difficult by building them up, right? Like, there's a perfect answer. And we frame situations as all or nothing. And then accommodators, they tend to think, am I doing enough? How can I adapt to make this work? And the feeling tends to be guilt. Behaviors are people-pleasing, adapting to others, rescuing others, fixing. Self-sabotage ends up keeping score, right? Because you got to protect yourself if you're always the one accommodating. And then we frame situations as either or. And the one mindset shift needed to stop comfort eating is getting to collaboration, and that conflict isn't inherently bad. It's an opportunity for wildly creative and successful solutions, including finding out that maybe there's no conflict at all, which is super fun and freeing. And so to get into this mindset, first you need to see what you need, and then you need to know what the situation needs. And don't assume you know on either end. And then again, we have our bonus tool from our great guests. So Linda, do you want to repeat kind of the summary of what you shared in like a sentence or two or what?
Yeah, I can't remember. I think my tip was to like check in. I don't remember what I said. I think it was check it. Like when I'm feeling that go, like I'm kind of paying attention to how I'm feeling. And if I feel like I'm gearing up or ramping up for battle, I kind of check in. And usually if I think about what's going on, there's usually some sort of underlying competitiveness. You know, I feel like you kind of apply that to all of them, but I feel like especially when you're a competitor, you have this like warrior kind of aspect.
Yeah, and I think that's important. I was going to say, because we think battling gets us places, right? Here, it's right. Like everything is framed in our culture in a battle war metaphor. So that's really important to realize. Like when you feel like you're battling, oh, you don't check in. I love that. For avoiders, again, a good question is, how can I get momentum around this? And what's meaningful to me about this that's worth putting the effort in of it going to be imperfect, that there's no best choice? And Karen, for the accommodators?
So really think about what other options you have, because there's usually multiple that you're not even realizing. And one more that I didn't really touch on, but just asking what helps me, because I constantly do things for other people all day. What do I need in this situation? That's oftentimes really tough for me to figure out if I'm really stuck in something. So knowing that there's options, but then also trying to figure out what do I need from that?
Yeah. And isn't it surprising? Sometimes we just need someone to listen, like not to solve it or fix it, but just like witness, like, here's where I am, right? Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought that up because like I said, our own needs will sometimes surprise us. They're often much more simpler and I think profound than what we think they are. So if you're listening at this episode, I really hope you guys will take some of these tools, start to observe yourself first doing these things. You will be surprised how much they control your life. And then practice out some of the tools that we gave you. And I hope that that will reduce your comfort eating. And of course, tune into Insatiable, where you'll always get more information and more insight into continuing your own health path, especially if you're interested in having your own truce with food. Insatiable is a wonderful resource for that. And you can subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, anywhere that podcasts are released, or at my own website, alishapiro.com/podcast. Thanks for being here, ladies.
Sure. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Health Rebels, for tuning in today. Have a reaction, question, or want the transcript from today's episode? Find me at alishapiro.com. I'd love if you leave a review on Apple Podcast and tell your friends and family about Insatiable. It helps us grow our community and share a new way of approaching health and our bodies. Thanks for engaging in a different kind of conversation. And remember, always, your body truths are unique, profound, real, and liberating.